It is just past 7:08 in the morning. You're listening to Upfront. I'm Brian Edwards-Tiekert.
And I'm Antonia Yuhas. In August of 2017, white nationalists marched through Charlottesville, Virginia, chanting, "Jews will not replace us." That weekend, Heather Heyer, who was protesting their presence, was murdered by an assailant using a car as a weapon. On Saturday, Robert Bowers entered the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh and stated that all Jews must die before opening fire and killing 11 of the congregants. As we heard, President Trump and First Lady Melania are on their way to Pittsburgh. The rabbi of Tree of Life Synagogue has welcomed their presence, but another dozen rabbis and tens of thousands of leading Jewish leaders have signed a letter that stated that until President Trump fully denounces white nationalism, stops targeting and endangering all minorities, ceases his assault on immigrants and refugees, he is not welcome in Pittsburgh. They further wrote, "For the past 3 years, your words and your policies have emboldened a growing white nationalist movement. You yourself called the murderer evil, but yesterday's violence is the direct culmination of your influence." Our guest today is Rabbi Danya Ruttenberg. She is rabbi in residence at Avoda and author of several books, including Nurture the Wow, Finding Spirituality in the Frustration, Boredom, Tears, Poop, Desperation, Wonder, and Radical Amazement of Parenting, Surprised by God, How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love Religion, and editor of Yentl's Revenge, The Next Wave of Jewish Feminism. She wrote an op-ed in the Washington Post this weekend in which she hailed the 11 dead at Tree of Life Synagogue as martyrs, but took on, in no unequivocal terms, President Trump, rampant and growing anti-Semitism, the National Rifle Association, and called on all of us to fight for a world that values every life, refugee and citizen, and every race and religion. Thank you for being with us, Rabbi Ruttenberg.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I want to start with your op-ed and helping our listeners understand what was taking place at Saturday Shabbat in Tree of Life Synagogue. I know you weren't there, but you wrote, for example, that there was a welcoming ceremony for a new baby boy in the community. Help sort of place us in the synagogue that day.
So in some ways, it was a regular Shabbat morning until it wasn't. We have a special liturgy that we recite every week. It's the Sabbath, the day of rest. It's a very holy and important day for Jews that we mark once a week. And so there's the Shabbat liturgy. There's the reading from the Torah, the weekly Torah portion. And this week, there was also a ceremony to welcome a baby boy into the community at, you know, 8 days old. So there was, it was a day of rest. It was a day of holiness. It's a day of community connection. And this was supposed to be just an especially wonderful day because it was a day of welcoming this new child into the community.
And then of course this, devastating event took place, and you write obviously with horror at the event itself, but not a tremendous amount of shock looking at a history of anti-Semitism and helping us understand that history. Can you talk more about that?
So this atrocity is situated in a lot of contexts. It is definitely situated in the history of anti-Semitism. We have more than 1,000 years of Jews being scapegoated and held up as the so-called cause for every social ill happening at a time and place when people are not happy with whatever's going on in the world. The origin of the myth that Jews are secretly, nefariously controlling everything is rooted in Christian oppression of Jews. The times and places when Jews have been held up as these secret masterminds have generally been times when Jews did not actually have power or privilege and access in society. But this story that the everything going wrong is actually the Jews, you know, controlling things from behind the scenes has been around for a very long time. It fueled pogroms. It fueled the Holocaust. And it is having a resurgence these days when we talk about George Soros paying protesters, which is not true. When we talk about George Soros secretly funding the caravan of refugees trying to find safety and freedom, also not true. We talk about globalists who are in control. When we look at Trump's last campaign ad before the election, which was holding up a lot of Jews, a lot of notable Jews, and images of money and talking about them, that is all part of a very, very old trope. So that is one of the threads running through this moment.
And specifically, you write about that Trump's continual use of the word globalist, and that is a, quote, well-known anti-Semitic dog whistle. Can you talk more about how that is a well-known anti-Semitic dog whistle and how using it, you place using it in context for listeners who are not familiar with it?
When we talk about globalist, we're talking about a people who are not really part of a country, and they're not really loyal to the places in which they live, and they're really part of some large international scheme that is deeply in line with the way Jews have been held up and vilified for centuries. The other thing I want to say about this is that anti-Jewish oppression functions in a different way than a lot of other oppressions, which many oppressions require keeping or involve keeping a group of people in poverty or otherwise at the bottom of the social strata. And anti-Jewish oppression actually thrives when Jews do okay in the world. America is the best Jews have ever had in history. And we're kind of okay here. And that actually bolsters anti-Jewish oppression because it gives the ruling, the people in power, an ability to say, look, it's them. They're the ones responsible, not us, for the reason you're unhappy. It's them. It's the globalists. It's the infiltrators. It's the people who are not really of this place. They're not really us. They're loyal to they're loyal to each other. They're not loyal to us. And it's a very old trope, and it's one that's being used to great effect right now.
Well, and also, the use of this term has been also brought on to embolden, of course, white nationalism and mm-hmm. the othering and harm to anyone who isn't a white nationalist of the United States, as however they define the term, and of course has mm-hmm. embraced incredibly anti-black, minority, anti-immigrant language as well. And that is something mm-hmm. that Robert Bowers was apparently quite steeped in. And he apparently wrote on October 10th in an account bearing his name, an attack on Hias in particular. Can you talk about Hias, what it does, and its relation to these events?
So Hias was originally dubbed the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society. It was originally an organization meant run by Jews to bring other Jews who were refugees, both before and during the Holocaust, to safety in America. And in over many, many decades, it evolved to be an organization that really is concerned with refugee resettlement and advocacy for refugees of all backgrounds. And so they've been very involved, for example, in resettling Syrian refugees, in working on this migrant crisis and all of the stuff associated with it. They do really holy work, in my opinion. We are actually commanded in the Torah more times than any other commandment to take care of the stranger, because we were strangers in Egypt. The ger, the stranger, the non-citizen, the non-national, the not one of us. Right? If somebody comes, it says explicitly in the Torah, if a ger, a stranger, comes to you, they should be like you, like the citizens. They should have the same status and the same protections. And we're told this again and again and again. So Hias's work is very in line with Jewish values and with what Judaism asks of us. What Hias does not do is control the migration patterns of refugees seeking safety in the United States. So Bowers had decided, looking at this sort of hysteria around this caravan, had decided that somehow the Jews were responsible for these poor, vulnerable people coming to the States and seeking refuge. And of course, his racism and this sort of talk of infiltration and other, and you know, this infestation language would not have happened if the people seeking safety were white. I just want to name that explicitly. But his racism and his xenophobia about the caravan needed to find a cause. And the cause, and this is where this old anti-Semitic trope comes in, was that clearly the Jews were somehow responsible in pulling the strings behind the scenes. There's a conspiracy theory that Soros is somehow funding the caravan. And so he decided that Hayas was a fair target for its rage.
And, of course, 1 week ago, Caesar Sayoc is accused of sending now 15 pipe bombs, the very first one of which that was identified was outside the home of George Soros's estate in New York. And Robert Bowers, who I think has been erroneously reported on as, quote, a critic of Trump, rather looking more at his writing, what is reportedly his writing, on social networks, he has said that he lamented that Trump's Make America Great Again movement cannot succeed while, quote, Jews infest the country, unquote. And he also has, quote, said, Hayas likes to bring invaders in that kill our people. I can't sit by and watch my people get slaughtered. Screw your optics, I'm going in, was reportedly the last thing that he wrote. And, you know, I think one of the important things that you do in your op-ed that I think is very useful is the, you know, lack of surprise at this moment happening with the rhetoric that Trump has chosen to use. And as you said, he's had very heated rhetoric about the caravan just in the last 2 weeks, particularly since he's been on the campaign trail, and increased uses of the words nationalists and globalists. And you know, help us put this into context again of the Trump administration and what you see as its role in these events.
The thing I want to lift up of all of these horrific quotes is the repeated language of infestation, right? That it's both Jews who are not of here, not us, as white nationalist thinking would go, and refugees from Latin America are also infestation, right? Not us. Dehumanizing language, the same kind of language that Trump used when talking about the families who were forcibly separated at the border. I think he also used the word infestation, but it was also this kind of insect-like language. It echoes how Hitler talked about the Jews as vermin. And it's notable that it's not just Jews, right? Jews are part of this larger matrix of racism, of xenophobia, right? The anti-Semitism that is being stoked here is of a part of this anti-immigrant language, which is mostly directed at people of Latino descent or of Latinos, anti-Muslim rhetoric, right? Anti-Black rhetoric. His attacks on many, many prominent Black Americans in ways that he would not go after white people. There are a lot of different kinds of racism and intolerance being put out in ways that are very explicit, in some ways that are, you know, more implicit, winks at his followers and that sort of thing. But this is all connected, and the folks at the Tree of Life synagogue are now forever linked to the shooting in Charleston. They're forever linked to the shooting at the Sikh temple in Wisconsin, right? They're forever linked to all of these hate crimes and attacks on houses of worship because the people who are worshiping have the audacity to be, undesirable according to the white supremacist narrative.
And our guest is Rabbi Danya Ruttenberg, and she is author of an op-ed in the Washington Post on October 28th, where one of the things that you wrote was the Jews gunned down in the midst of the Shabbat liturgy and Torah reading already had plenty of their own thoughts and prayers. What they actually needed was legislative action and the political will to prioritize their lives and safety over the interests of the National Rifle Association. Can you speak more about why you chose to write that?
We're in the midst of a national health epidemic, gun violence is an actual, I mean, this is a horrific reality. I don't even have the words for it. And the fact that our Congress refuses to focus on background checks, focus on licensing, focusing on real research and treating, I mean, there are ways you can treat gun violence as a public health crisis if you wanted to, and Congress has no interest because they are in the pockets of the NRA and would rather let children be slaughtered and teenagers be slaughtered and innocent people going to church and women who had the audacity to tell a man no when he wanted to approach her romantically and Jews who are trying to pray and the horrors that we are seeing now would be, I mean, they wouldn't be erased completely given the rhetoric that's being stoked, but they would be deeply mitigated if we had real protections in place to make sure that people did not get easy access to guns. So we are both in the context of this increasing anti-Semitism, we're in the context of this larger increasing white supremacist rhetoric, and we're in this context of gun access that makes living out these horrors so astonishingly easy. And so this is also an important piece of it.
What should happen next? You know, people are deeply distraught. I think still stunned at this moment from the weekend's events, from last week's shooting where a shooter almost went to a majority black church, couldn't get in because the doors were locked, and then shot a black man and a black woman at the Kroger supermarket. And we're still seeing pipe bombs being discovered, even as of yesterday, being sent reportedly by Caesar Sayoc. The one yesterday went to CNN. It's the 15th pipe bomb. You know, what do you advise now? What do you advise for the listening public?
Get out there and phone bank and canvas and vote and make sure everyone else in your life is voting. It happens. We are in a unique window where we have an opportunity to change the narrative in a serious and meaningful way. And for everyone who is feeling despair and anger and frustration and grief and confusion, take those feelings and transform them into action, because this is a critical moment in our country. And if we can get the voter turnout necessary, if we can get people to show up, if we can all show up and do our part and knock on doors and make those phone calls and everything that needs to happen, then we have a chance to really, really take back the wheel and to start shifting the country very strongly in another direction. So that's, you know, in the immediate term, that's my advice.
Rabbi Ruttenberg, I was wondering if you could use your religious training to help us parse a news development that whose significance may be lost on a big chunk of the public. Yesterday, Vice President Mike Pence was at a campaign appearance for a Republican Congress member. And had the opening convocation be given by someone who he described as a leader in the Jewish community who prayed in the name of Jesus the Messiah, what's going on?
Yeah. Pence is a Christian supremacist. He thinks everyone should be Christian. I don't know why he's even paying lip service and pretending to bring on someone who is not, as far as I read them, a member of the Jewish tradition. Jews do not believe that Jesus Christ is the Messiah. Christians who believe that, great. I affirm you. If we can live in a world that's pluralistic and there's space for everybody, that's wonderful. But that's not Judaism. And the fact that he and we have a thousand or more years of, I mean, 2000 really, of Christian supersessionist thinking, where Jesus came to replace the Jews, right? That now that Jesus is here, the Jews all need to convert, right? We have the Inquisition, we have the Crusades, we have a history of pogroms, we have a long, long line of oppression of Jewish people because there is a belief that the New Testament has replaced the Old, right? The Word has replaced the Law, all of that. That is not the only Christian theology out there, but it is one of them. And that theology has done a lot of damage to Jews. And so the reason I and so many of my colleagues are so angry about this is that this is not, like, there is no Jew invoking Jesus. That's not a thing. And him bringing in what is basically sneaky supersessionism, right? Like, look at this great Jew already accepted Jesus as his savior, is a direct attack in a very tender historical place, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Our guest, Rabbi Danya Ruttenberg, is a rabbi and author and currently serves as rabbi in residence at Avoda, an organization dedicated to creating leaders for economic justice. Her op-ed in The Washington Post, which ran this weekend, is entitled "The Victims of the Tree of Life Synagogue Massacre Are Martyrs." Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.